I am pleased to welcome back to this table the same four people who helped us kick off the 2023 season back in January, the General Assembly's caucus leaders, Senate President Pro Tem Roderick Bray, a Martinsville Republican, Senate Minority Leader Greg Taylor, an Indianapolis Democrat, House Speaker Todd Houston, a Fishers Republican, and House Minority Leader Phil Giaquinta, a Fort Wayne Democrat. Thank you all. Hope you've had a little shut-eye and that vacations are in your future. But I do appreciate you coming in. We're going to get into some specifics, but I just want to start with a couple of quick questions. We'll go around the table. Starting with you, Senator Bray, what's your takeaway from the session in a sentence or two?
I think if you want to, the thing that I would focus on most is health, mental health, which is our Senate Bill number one, and public health as well as the health care costs. We spend a lot of energy talking about those items that pertain to the health of Indiana Hoosiers, and I feel like we had a pretty good success in that regard.
Senator Taylor.
We did spend some money on mental health services, but I think this was the session of what I've classified as missed opportunities with the resources that we have. I don't think we did what we could have done to help Hoosiers in the state of Indiana as much as we could have.
We're going to get into that because, of course, they were sizable allocations, but not as much as the task forces that had looked at these issues and recommended. So we'll try to get into that. Todd Houston.
A budget session. So I think, another great Indiana budget. We were able to make strong strategic investments in education, mental health, and we've been able to, accelerate tax cuts, giving families more choices. So as any for their students' education experience. So I think, in a budget session, the highest profile thing is the budget. I think we had a very successful one.
Well, it's the only thing you're obligated to do, certainly by that's your only duty, I guess. You found other things to do, though, along the way, thank goodness, so we can talk about those as well. Phil Giaquinta.
Yeah, I would say echo what Senator Taylor said about missed opportunities. While we did allocate some dollars to those things, mental health, public health, we could have gone further. And then the other thing, too, I believe still the shortcoming of fully funding public education. I know we're going to get into that a little bit, but when we look at, we all go to our school runs and see how our local school districts did, they continue to come up short. So that's very disappointing.
And I believe one of your districts, in fact, and I know we will get into this, actually is in negative territory, was it?
Yes.
Not for the second
year
of the biennium. Good stage setter here. But one more quick question around the budget, of course, is the one thing you had to do. In addition to that, though, you passed 251 other bills out of about 1,150 that were not a bad batting average. What one bill, for good reason or bad, will have the biggest impact, do you think, on the average Hoosier who might be watching this or listening to this?
I'd say our focus on mental health. We all know, based on the experience we had through COVID, that mental health is a challenge. It's more so as a result of that, but it probably was before as well. And so the ability to continue to invest in that and put in infrastructure that's going to help people use the 988 line and then immediately find help is, I think, going to be a game changer for an awful lot of folks.
What bill, for better or for good reason or bad, in your mind?
Well, for me here in Marion County, for my colleagues in Lake County and Vandenberg County and St. Joe County, it's the sharing of property tax referendums with charter schools. I thought that was an interesting move to have those four counties be different than the other 88 in the state of Indiana. And I think we're going to see some interesting outcomes when we talk about sharing property tax.
When public school districts have their referenda to try to get either security measures additional or other capital
or operating expenses. Costs,
the money, if there is a brick and mortar charter school in that jurisdiction, they will get a share of but only for those four counties. Somehow it was noted that Allen County, even though it's similar
one of the largest
in population, somehow missed out, but quote unquote missed out. But that, in your mind, is the biggest
yes.
real.
It's going to be an interesting outcome.
One bill.
Well, I just say I'm excited about the fact that all public schools will have the opportunity to share those revenues. But, you know, for us, it's housing. I think, you know, we recognize in Indiana one of the greatest challenges we have is that we have a real need and demand for new housing stock. And House Bill 1005 really sets the infrastructure up to support local communities to be able to provide more housing options. I think we've heard loud and clear from Hoosiers, particularly younger Hoosiers, that this is a big problem for them. And we're very pleased to be able to address that.
And this is a revolving fund of state funds that would help builders who are creating residential developments build the roads, the infrastructure, the sewer lines. And theoretically, then the money comes back and can be.
It creates more housing options. It's one of the biggest barriers for growth is making sure you have the housing available. And I think we really took a leadership position on that this year.
One bill. What you want? For better or for good reason or bad?
I'm going to give you two. I'm going to cheat here real quick. I'll be fast. The 21st Century Scholar, both these bills authored by House Democrats. We talk about missed opportunities. Parents are missing the opportunity to sign up for what has been a really successful program. That's the 21st Century Scholarship Program. So it's going to really, I think, help fix more of an automatic renewal.
Exactly.
And then second, Representative Harris, Representative Vernon Smith had an anti-bullying bill. We saw a really emotional testimony in the Senate for sure with the incident that happened, I believe, over in on the west side of the state. And hopefully that will go to help what we feel is a real problem in schools these days with the bullying of kids.
All right. Well, let's go to the budget since, again, $44 billion with a B. A lot of money. And the biggest chunk, of course, is, as it always is, K-12 education. 8% overall tuition support increase. But that number, some say, is misleading because a third of the new dollars are going to private schools in the form of what is, for all practical purposes now, a universal voucher program. Essentially now, if you're making a family of four, $220,000 a year, or 400%, I think, is the technical way threshold, you're going to, you know, the pathways are gone, the other sort of criteria that steered people. Is this a win for public education, or is this a reason for them to be wary?
That's a huge win for public education, honestly. If you look at the last three budgets that we've passed in 2019, $763 million new dollars to public K-12 education. In 21, $1.1 billion, and again now in 2023, $1.5 billion. So we've increased that record every time, and I don't know how you could otherwise interpret it, but a big win for public education.
What was it that your caucus was not going to go that direction? You looked at the budget that you all had offered up, and you had essentially had no new dollars for vouchers. Is it just the fact that the April 19th revenue update had another $1.5 billion in revenue, or was there some sort of debate within the caucus that philosophical as opposed to just pure financial that carried
the
day?
Well, there's a debate in the caucus. So obviously, we've got 40 members, but not everybody thinks alike. That's the case every year. And, you know, same thing with regard to the relationship between the Senate and the House. We've got majorities on each side, but no people don't think alike necessarily. We have seen this this position over the last couple of budgets where the House has a larger expansion of vouchers, but you know our caucus is firmly in favor of parental choice for schools and vouchers, and we have showed that in the last few years and the support we've given that. The fact that we didn't have anything in our budget, we knew there was going to be a new forecast coming up just the day after we passed our Senate budget, and we'd have an opportunity to negotiate and pull that in, and that's exactly what we did.
And to illustrate your point about a variety of opinions, you did have one member of your caucus who voted against the budget for the reason
of
the voucher
expansion.
Now, you already talked, Greg Taylor, about the charter school issue and the impact that could have on, say, Indianapolis Public Schools and other districts that in or near your district. Is that the bigger concern, or is the ever-increasing slice of the pie that seems to be going to private parochial education? You know, back when this started in 2011, it was a pilot program with 4,000 students. Then it's up to 53,000 now, and the projection is it'll be 90,000 plus by 2025. Which is the bigger issue for you?
They're both big issues. The property tax sharing is a concern for me, especially in Marion County. And again, I wish we'd have done it statewide. I still don't understand why we just chose those four counties. The second piece, I think it's very clear where our priorities are. When over 90% of our children go to traditional public schools, we see a 3% increase in one of my public schools and then a 1.5% increase in the second year to buy in it. At the same time, charter schools will see an average in my district of a 9 to 12% increase. And then you've got the voucher program that, to me, was just a way to make sure that wealthy people, $220,000 a year, those students would have never seen the inside of a public classroom. They were already in the schools, and now they're just going to be able to switch over to vouchers. And to me, that's not supporting traditional public school where 90%, and I keep emphasizing the 90% of schools, of children go to those schools, and we know inflation's at 4.8%, yet we only fund an increase of 3% and then 1.5% in some of the traditional public schools.
Let me say something about that, if I could. Senator Taylor is right in the statistic that public school, traditional public school kids have about 90% of the population of school kids. But it's worth noting that they also get 91% of the education dollars.
They should.
I don't have any problem with that at all. But they get more than their percentage of students that they are. And so the voucher students, let's say they're, I don't know exactly what the number is, but if they're 6% of the population of school kids, they get less, maybe 5% of the dollars. So public, traditional public schools still get more than a higher percentage of the dollars than they are a percentage of the school kids that are going through our school system right now.
And we should do that. Let's be basic. I don't like giving credit for things we should do. I like giving credit for things that we go over and above. We went over and above when we started this program at $20 million. I was there. I was actually the sole Democrat in the Senate to vote for the voucher program because it had noble beginnings. It was about children who didn't have the opportunity financially to go to these what we call better schools.
They had to start by going to two semesters at a failing school.
Absolutely. Right? They had to be at an F school. Now we're at, I think it's going to be $700 million and over 53,000, largest school district in the state now.
Well, you mentioned the charter school increase. I'm surprised you didn't mention the increase I've seen, and again, you can play numbers, but 69% increase in the first year of the biennium, if you want to frame it that way,
right,
for private schools in terms of the voucher program, and 14%, I think, in the second
year.
Because this is a new program, that's probably not a fair way to bring out those numbers.
A long time ago, Indiana stopped funding schools. We fund students. That's who we fund. We fund students. And we don't say, it doesn't matter where you go. It just matters we fund students. We've taken this approach. We've gotten rid of things where we don't fund school corporations. We fund students to where they go to school. By the way, the largest school choice program in the state is traditional public-to-public choice. And so I think, you know, that's what we've done. That's been our history. That's what we continue to do, that we fund students. We let families and parents choose where they think is the best place for their child to go to be educated. And I think that's, you know, good public policy. And I don't know why we'd want to do anything but, you know, continue to do it and accelerate it. And frankly, it's worked quite well for the last decade.
Where is equilibrium? I'm just curious because we had Bob Boehning, who was sort of the architect of this plan back in 2011. And sort of smiled when I said, you know, would you just as soon see that 9% become 100%? And essentially, I think he would.
I don't care.
I mean, people talk about 9% private, but won't this encourage that number to increase?
I don't care. I mean, I think at the end of the day, I trust that families are going to send their kids to the school that best fit their needs. I sent my kids to public schools. My wife and I both went to public schools. I'm always struck
ran
by
for
this.
The school board. So,
I was on a local public school board. I mean, but that was the best choice for my family. Every family should have that choice. And in the state of Indiana, we have a Supreme Court case that ruled 5-0 that this is the completely statutory authority. We have the statutory authority to do this. We fund students. We don't fund systems. And that's what we're doing.
If the money, if you could be kept whole and you'd have those percentages, would this bother you, or is it more philosophical in your concern?
Well, for me, it's philosophical. I mean, I've never supported vouchers.
So even if you were getting
10%. Never have, never will. That's not what we do as a state. That's not what the Constitution says we should do. When I got my first, when I got the school run, it's the from the House version, it was 1.6% increase the first year, negative 0.6 for Fort Wayne Community Schools. Senate version was a little bit better. It was a little over 3 for Fort Wayne Community Schools, a little under 3. And that was holding the line at vouchers. And I always think to myself, gosh, what if we lowered that vouchers? Yeah. What could we do for public schools? But then to bump it up, you've seen now I'm at a little over 3% the first year and still negative the second year. And so the impact has been great. It's not keeping up with – those numbers don't keep up with inflation. And I think we as a state need to decide – I think just questions need to be asked. Are we giving up on public education in this state? And I hope not. But when we continue to bump up the numbers that we have over $1 billion increase for private schools, it's signaling that maybe some have given up on public education.
I promise we'd cover a lot of topics, and here we are going to spend the whole time on education. Do you want to respond to that, or have you given up on public education?
No, I do. I think this actually is an investment in public education, because public schools, as the speaker said, the biggest school choice is a child going from one public school to another public school. When everybody knows that there's a little bit of competition there and they have to raise their game in order to get those students, you see schools trying to come up with new programs and new ideas so they can make a better product. That is exactly what we want, and that's how our public schools are going to thrive. If everybody knows that your public schools are just going to get money regardless of whether school children are going there or not, you're not going to be incentivized to provide a better product.
Well, and I haven't seen one outcome or anything that says increasing the number for vouchers actually improves education in the state.
The speaker even said it. We've been doing this for the last decade. Where are we at from educational attainment? I mean, we've been doing the same thing, and we're going to double down on it this year when we know that our children are falling behind the rest of the country from an educational attainment standpoint.
Senator Taylor, the last data we had before the pandemic and all the testing was Indiana was one of the top states in educational growth.
Where
by
are
the
we
NAEP
at?
Scores. Well, nobody's been able to do testing, largely because our friends and the national government have been, and some people here in Indiana aren't very excited about actually assessing students, but we were one of the fastest growing states in the country in educational attainment. It's worked. I think giving families more options to get their kids to the school that best fits their needs, I will stand on that, and our caucus will stand on that platform all day long. We know it's popular with families, and it's been successful for students.
It's going to be even more popular, especially for those families that make $250,000 a year. I agree.
Who pay sales taxes, who pay income taxes, who pay property taxes, who is invested as any family in the state of Indiana.
And before we leave education and move on to other topics, I'm going to give you guys a kumbaya moment.
Right.
Because I think you all more or less agree with the fact that parents will no longer be paying for textbook rental fees and curricular. You all approached it different ways.
Right.
The House approached it one way, the Senate approached it. Is this a big deal?
It's a huge deal, and I want to say thank you to my colleague, Senator Bray, for understanding that it's important that we didn't put that textbook fee on the backs of our public schools. In the House budget version, the school districts are going to have to pick up that tab. We have the resources, and we were able to come to an agreement, and that now the state's going to pick up that tab.
All right. You guys mentioned taxes, so you were true to form. You don't like taxes. I know your caucus doesn't. But you did away with income taxes for military individuals living in the state. You said no to the idea of an increased cigarette tax. You said no to a cell phone surcharge to pay for mental health. You're going to have a commission that's going to study for the next couple of years this whole tax system, maybe with an eye toward doing away with the individual income tax, even though that, as was noted here earlier, that's going to already be compressed from a 7-year phase out to a 5-year phase out. Are you going to have any money when all is said and done?
Well, the 5-year phase out is just to take it to 2.9, which is of the states that have an income tax, it's tied for the lowest. But, we want to take that Senator Holman's bill, Senate Bill 3, to create a tax study commission to look at our tax structure, I think, is a really good idea. We'd like to be able to do something transformational for the state of Indiana. Maybe that's the idea of getting rid of income tax altogether. That's a big bite. That's $7.5 billion that you'd have to come up with somewhere else or do without. So that maybe that's realistic, maybe it's not, but at least it's worthwhile to take a look at and see what advantages will come to us if we did that. Maybe we don't get there. But the other thing we'll take a look at, too, is property taxes. That's been a big topic of this last legislative session. We did a lot of things in House Bill 1499 that are going to help lower those or keep those property taxes from growing and giving local governments the ability to.
A lot of people are going to be taking a hit. I mean, just
absolutely.
Because
absolutely. When you open those tax bills, and they're about to become due here in the next week, and local governments are going to be able to drop those tax bills. We've given some avenues for that, as well as we've done some steps to curb that growth. As we all know, local tax dollars, property tax dollars all go to local governments, and local governments set those rates. So it's worthwhile to have them look at that. But the other thing that we might be able to talk about, no promises whatsoever, is you take the homestead tax. You know, that's where the challenge is. If somebody is retired, they don't have a lot of income anymore, but their property continues to add value. On one level, that's a great thing, but can become difficult for them to afford. So maybe we can get rid of the homestead tax. That's not as big a number as getting rid of the income tax. We'd have to accommodate local governments there. I don't want to get everybody, mayors across the state, excited. But that's the sort of thing that we can take a look at in a transformational way.
You know, lots of big ticket items. We mentioned mental health. We mentioned public health, not to the degree that the governor had wanted or the task forces that had looked at these issues had wanted. Ready grants, $500 million there, $500 million for closing deals, $150 million for land acquisition and economic development. Are these the right priorities?
Well, and I'll... It's interesting regarding Senate Bill 4. I was looking at the vote totals the other day. I think House Democrats were the ones that actually put that over the top. We were happy to support that. I think and I appreciate the work of Dr. Bach, former Senator Kennelly, that did on that bill. I've always been and have always supported. We've been talking about, or I've talked about, quality of life and how can we improve our cities and towns. And if that means, you know, more investment through Ready Grants and things like that, I personally have always been a supporter of that. I think with regards, you know, to the setting of taxes, it's always going to be, you know, what's going to be the replacement, because locals are going to have to be able to still operate and things like that. So I'm kind of looking forward to that study, actually, to see what will come about. But as we look at that, we have to make sure that we aren't shortchanging folks, like I said, cities and towns so that they can do their job.
And, you know, Todd Houston, this was a budget session. You correctly pointed out that's front and center, fiscal policy issues, tax policy issues. But still, we had time, whether you like it or not, for some of these issues, the culture, so-called culture war issues, a ban on gender-confirming procedures for minors who consider themselves, identify as trans. You had the no sex ed, essentially, or human sexuality discussions below grade 3. You had the parent teachers being obligated to notify parents if a child wants to be referred to by a different pronoun and so forth. All of those things, critics would say, already were done in statute. Was that time well spent?
I want to go back one quick thing on the tax thing, John. Every time we cut taxes, we get more money in. And over this budget will keep billions of dollars over the decade in Hoosier pockets. You know, we've sent back tax refunds over the last 2 years, which help Hoosiers, and those dollars stay in Indiana communities. So I think we should never never downplay the importance of that. It's better that the Hoosier spends those dollars in their community than we do. On the other issues, look, we accomplished a great deal of things across a whole series of different issues, and we put those things under the common sense category, supported by Hoosiers across the state.
All right. We have to adjourn sine die, or at least for this week. Thank you all for being here. We covered a lot of topics, still a lot to cover, but as I always say, I wish we had a couple hours. Thank you, though. I really appreciate your commitment to public service in the state of Indiana and your willingness to come and chat about it. Again, my guests have been Senate President Pro Tem Roderick Bray, a Martinsville Republican, Senate Minority Leader Greg Taylor, an Indianapolis Democrat, House Speaker Todd Houston, a Fishers Republican, and House Minority Leader Phil Giaquinta, a Fort Wayne Democrat. And time now for our weekly conversation with Indiana lawmakers analyst Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, part of Hanna News Service. Ed, I had notes. We only got scratched the surface. What do we need to know about this session?
Wow, that's a pretty broad question, John. Let me answer that with an analogy. You know, we had a great rock singer, folk singer, whatever, pass away earlier this week, and listening to the tributes, I found a lot of the legislative session in there. Gordon Lightfoot. Now, he was a guy that the cultural elite kind of looked down on, and they felt that he kind of lacked artistic value. But at the same time, the masses loved him, and he was probably, you know, the greatest, maybe other than Neil Young, that Canada had to offer. And I think the session was a lot like that. A lot of people thought, well, wait a minute, you know, they didn't deal with some of the key things, where, you know, they did these things that were a little bit more oriented toward, you know, the grassroots. But in the end, you know, that's probably what the people, at least in the districts of the majority of the legislators, wanted.
I'm trying to remember or make some kind of quip about the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, but I'll leave that to quicker wits. You know, any surprises from the governor's office? You know, a lot of bills are now on his desks. I think 68 bills were passed in the final day. Should we expect any surprises from the governor?
No, I think he may have some reservations about the one bill that deals with administrative regulations. He vetoed another similar bill a year ago. He may have some qualms about that.
You know, more control in the hands of the General Assembly and less.
Right. But I think, you know, that begs the bigger question about some of the things that got into the budget at the last minute, some of the policy things, pay raises for some of the key state officials. There were some other little things in there, something dealing with the informal advisory opinions of the inspector general. But things that hadn't been vetted in front of the public, had not gone through any committee, had not been heard on the floor, those kind of things that just appeared in the budget. That kind of thing is a little bit troubling still to some. And then the fact that, you know, in the three iterations of the final budget conference committee report, all of a sudden you ended up with $312 million more for public schools. Now, that's a lot of money, even for legislators, and to be able to kind of come up with that, oh, well, we'll just take it from the pension pay down at the last minute, you know, that doesn't reflect well on the General Assembly and the fact that things are done at the last minute instead of, again, you know, in a more comprehensive manner is a little bit troubling.
And when you have these kinds of bills, and there was one also, the libraries, school libraries, in terms of harmful and obscene materials, which sort of had been dead and then came back, does the public care? Is there any repercussion?
Oh, in the short run, there's concern, but no. And we'll see that in the next election.
All right. Ed, as always, appreciate your insight.
Thank you, John.
The 2023 General Assembly session has wrapped up, and the final word goes to State House journalists who've covered the session. We'll get their picks on the winners and losers on the next Indiana Lawmakers. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwanis, and on behalf of analyst Ed Feigenbaum, WFYI Public Media, and Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, I thank you for joining us, and I invite you to visit WFYI.org for more Statehouse news. Until next week, take care.